You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Backbone Collective is a national coalition of survivors of violence against women and watchdog NGO that acts as a voice for victims of domestic abuse. The collective recently released the results of a survey completed by 156 women. The conclusions were pretty damning of the family court, saying that there was systemic failure within the court system and that some decisions being made in the court were putting women and children in further danger. These findings then form the basis for 10 court users to write 160 critical questions to put to the family court, the government and the Law Society about how the court operates. Last Wednesday, the Principal Family Court Judge Lawrence Ryan released a media statement in response to the criticisms made by the Backbone Collective, in which Judge Ryan said many of the issues raised by the collective were already addressed or discussed by Parliament. He also reiterated the separation of powers between the judiciary and Parliament and directly addressed some of the criticisms. Michelle Duggan, chair of the New Zealand Law Society's Family Law Section, also released a statement supporting the comments of Judge Ryan. 95BFM reporter Caitlin McElhagger spoke to both Duggan and Professor Mark Hennigan, Dean of Law at the University of Otago, about the Backbone Collective's criticisms of the family court and recent family court reforms. I began my discussion with Michelle Duggan by asking whether she was supportive of a watchdog NGO like the Backbone Collective.
Look, I think it's always really important that we have people and groups who have an interest in our court system and who are there to support people who are either in or have been through, you know, one of our courts. So fundamentally, you know, a really good idea.
And the way that they're going about this is quite interesting. You know, they're reaching out to women who are survivors of violence and getting them to fill in surveys so that they can, you know, get some findings and get some kind of common themes and issues from these people. Is that the sort of market research sounds like the wrong term, but I mean, effectively, is that the right kind of way, do you think, to go about gauging the public perception of people within the system?
I mean, I think I'd probably call it feedback rather than market research. And yes, it probably is, but of course you have to be really careful when you get feedback that you don't suggest the answers that you want. And I guess one of the concerns I have about the survey that the Backbone Collective appear to have used, and certainly the questions that the Backbone Collective have put to Judge Ryan and Minister Adams and to the New Zealand Law Society, is that the questions themselves all contain answers or conclusions. And for me, if you ask a question in a certain way, you're going to get a certain answer. And of course, if you act for, you're the representative group for a number of people who have had unhappy experiences, then you're only going to be able to report on unhappy experiences, aren't you? I mean, and I wonder how many people women who have had, you know, satisfactory experiences and who have felt that family court have dealt with their situations really appropriately. I wonder how many of those women the Backbone Collective is speaking with or has spoken to.
I don't think they were claiming to be doing research per se. I think they were raising issues on behalf of people who had come to them and said, these are questions we'd like you to ask. And I see in their response to the court, they were trying to build although the way it came across, I think it came across as though this was standard practice, everyday practice in the family court, which I think is a bit harsh, because at the end of the day, I don't think there's no way the family court every day has bad outcomes. I mean, any court will have days where it doesn't work as well as it should, but not every day. And this just gave the impression that blanketly across the whole court. I don't think they intended to do that, but that's how it came across in the report. And I see their response to the family court is they want to build a bridge with the family court and try and work with the family court to try and improve things. But of course, when you get blanket criticism, your first response is to say, well, I'm not going to listen to it because it's just too blanket in the way it was put. And that just may be just the way it was worded, because what they did was interview 10 women and 10 women gave them questions they want to ask of the court, which is fair enough, but that's as far as it goes. And it's the experiences of these 10 women, which are their reality, their experience in the court, which we cannot deny, people's experiences are real to them, and then look at whether or not the system is performing that way across a number of situations, or was it particularly bad in these situations of the ten women who responded in good faith, and then start building from there.
Michelle Duggan and I also discussed the response to the Backbone Collective's concerns by Principal Family Court Judge Ryan. It is relatively rare for a member of the judiciary to publicly respond to criticisms, and I asked for Michelle's opinion on the concerns raised by Judge Ryan in his media statement.
I think the main concern that he expressed was the blanket attack on the family court and its judges, and some of the erroneous information that is being used by or being promoted by the Backbone Collective. For example, the family court being, you know, a completely private space. Well, actually, you can read family court reports. You can access those just off, you know, the district court website or judgments website. If someone is unhappy with a family court decision, you know, you can take that to the High Court. It's just quite different. Certainly my experience of the family court, and lots of other people's experience of the family court, is that it's not the sort of closed society that I think the Backbone Collective are suggesting it is.
And that,
so like the media can report on court cases these days. I mean, you've got to do it anonymously, and you know, that to me is essential, you know, given that a lot of what the family court does is talk about, you know, make decisions about children's lives. You want to protect children's privacy, but you can report on cases. Look, if there's a problem with the law, and look, I don't for a second, and I don't think Judge Ryan for a second would say that the law is perfect. And you know, the current government has been putting a lot of effort into how effective changes to family violence can be made, given our, you know, appalling statistics. And I think the better place to bring about change is by participating in that legislative process. I'm not sure that you get too far by criticising judges who actually follow the law. They don't, you know, they're not the ones that make the law. So for me, something that would be really, really useful, and no doubt they're doing it, is for the Backbone Collective to support women and as a group make submissions on the Family Whānau Violence Bill, which is going to go to the Select Committee in the next few months, because that's the way to get law.
Mark Hennigan and I discussed recent family court reforms which have placed increased responsibility on families to resolve disputes on their own rather than through the family court, and the resulting stripping back of services provided to families by the court system. I asked Mark whether a watchdog NGO such as the Backbone Collective was a foreseeable outcome of these reforms.
Well, it could be possibly a symptom. I mean, there's always been concern. It's not just in recent times, even under the previous system, there was always concern in matters involving violence. And it's been an ongoing issue in the court that sometimes the courts don't take violence or understand the dynamics of violence and the impact that violence can have on people and children's lives as much as they could. Now, I'm aware, because I do work on a judicial education committee, I'm very aware that judges are being trained quite heavily now in the dynamics of violence, both for the criminal and family courts, because I think the judges are now becoming very aware we have to understand violence better. So I hope that will make improvement across all those areas, because I mean, violence is something we don't like to talk about. It's an awful subject, but understanding the impact it has on people's lives and how it might affect their behaviour, because sometimes people without thinking about it can blame the party who's been the victim for behaving in strange ways. But if you've been abused by someone, you often can react. I do cases with my students in class where the person who's been beaten then reacts by leaving awful phone call messages on the phone to the other party, and it looks to the court like they're the baddie, but they're not, because that's how you react when you've been, if someone's beaten you and treated you badly, you often react in a way that may look like you're the one that's at fault, and it's not the case at all. It's just that it's human reaction when someone's treated you badly to want to do something about it, you know, or else the person becomes not able to cope with children for a while because their confidence has been locked so low and they've been knocked around so much that they can't even hardly function. They need lots of support to be able to get their self-confidence and their esteem back up again. So those sort of consequences aren't always understood, because when you're in a court hearing, you're only seeing the parties and that's it. You're not really seeing what goes on behind the scenes. And I suppose it is always important to hear what it's like to be the person. I mean, one of the things I always encourage my students is to work with people or talk with people who work at Women's Refuge. They really see the hard side of what violence does to families and what it does to children. They really see it, and the ongoing impact on children and people can be for quite some time, and we all pay the price down the track if people have been traumatised by these things. It comes out in other types of behaviour. It's not pleasant to be in a home where you're traumatised by violence.
That was Michelle Duggan, Chair of the New Zealand Law Society's Family Law Section, and Professor Mark Hennigan, Dean of Law at the University of Otago, speaking about the Backbone Collective's criticisms of the Family Court and recent reforms affecting how the court system operates. Caitlin also spoke to both Duggan and Hennigan about the participation of Mackenzie Friends in the Family Court process. A Mackenzie Friend is the name given to a support person for people who are representing themselves in court. Mackenzie Friends are not lawyers and cannot address the court without permission or draft any legal documents, but they can sit with litigants in court for support. Here's Caitlin again speaking to Michelle Duggan.
The Family Court is set up particularly to deal with Mackenzie Friends. They have something called a lay assistance form that can be filled in, sure. You know, outside, which is, I think, the only court that I know of who has a set up kind of template for people filling that in, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so changes to legal aid in 2009 have made it far more difficult for people to get access to legal aid, and so more and more people are representing themselves. Do you think?
Well, not only because of the changes to legal aid, the changes to the family court system have increased the number of unrepresented people as well, because now if you make just an ordinary application for a parenting order, so a non-urgent application, the law says that you have to represent yourself until a judge at a certain stage of the proceedings gives you permission to have a lawyer. So, you know, access to justice, for the Law Society, that caused a lot of access to justice concern. So that, of course, has increased the number of Mackenzie Friends.
And so just to go back to that change, what was the rationale behind removing lawyers from the process for so long?
Well, it's look, quite frankly, money. From everything that I have read and all of the people that I've spoken to, the driver in the change was money. The government wanted to reduce what they spent on legal aid, and an easy fix was getting lawyers out to a certain point in the process, because of course if you haven't got lawyers there, you're not paying for them.
And so that was obviously, you know, I imagine that the Backbone Collective is concerned about this, but it sounds like the Law Society and other people working within the system were equally concerned about that lack of representation. Is that right?
Look, that's an understatement. That was a huge concern to us. And I know a lot of people say, well, look, you know, you're looking after yourselves. You're only concerned because, you know, you're not making any money, you know, if you can't be there. I'd like to think that for the most of us, it was more than that. You know, that it really is about people having the right to be represented, because for a lot of people it is enormously threatening, frightening, what are some other words, intimidating, the thought of going into what is a foreign environment, you know, to deal with your ex-partner, someone who may have been, you know, violent towards you, and have to do that without someone there who knows the law. And okay, so a Mackenzie Friend, going back to that topic, is able to give you that support, but unless they actually know the law, they can really only provide you with moral support.
And is it, do you think, an issue that, you know, I mean, if Parliament has made the decision to remove lawyers from the process until X stage,
yes,
that is, you know, whether we all like it or not, that is the state of the nation,
yes,
you know, that is the
is.
System that we must operate in.
Uh-huh.
And so the necessary kind of corollary of that is that Mackenzie Friends and other support people are on the rise because,
yes,
you know, people need somebody there with them. If we accept that, you know, just like in the UK, we are going to be dealing with more and more Mackenzie Friends in
uh-huh.
the profession, and more and more professional Mackenzie Friends.
In the professional, do you mean in the court system?
Yes. Sorry, in the legal, in, you know, framework.
Yes.
Then, I was going to say industry, that's not right. Then, you know, we are going to have to deal with this. Would you like to see some sort of training or some sort of accreditation process? Or, I mean, is it just that we will see how it goes and that individual judges at the time can say yes or no to a particular McKinsey friend? Because there is currently no regulation around who can support people, and that does increase access to justice on the one hand, but on the other hand, the benefit of lawyers is that they are held to very strict standards.
Does it increase access to justice? It might do, but I don't know that you can link McKinsey friends to access to justice. You know, you may have a McKinsey friend who's legally trained, therefore, you know, yes, you have, you know, arguably access to justice, but what happens if your McKinsey friend isn't legally trained and has a particular agenda that they want to push, or they have... they don't have a good understanding of the court process. So I think I would say, yes, I think it should be dealt with on a case-by-case basis by the judge. Yes, some training. Look, I don't think that could be a bad thing. I'm not sure about accreditation. How you go about getting accreditation to be a McKinsey friend, I'm not quite sure what that training program would look like. Suspiciously, I suspect like a law degree. So probably dealing with each application just on its merits is the best way to approach it.
Now here's Mark Hennigan talking to Caitlin about his thoughts on McKinsey friends and whether they increase access to justice.
I think the difficulty is that technically they're not meant to be lawyers anyway, they're meant to be McKinsey friends, so they're normally a layperson who will be... I mean, from an emotional point of view, it's nice to have someone beside you to help you, and that can be emotional support can be important. But as you get into legal proceedings, it becomes important to someone to know what the law is, to say, hold on, that evidence can't be admitted. The issue here is this, because what the issue is. Legal training trains people to focus on what's really relevant to the judge in the particular process, and a McKinsey friend may not be able to do that. So it may be like two litigants in person trying to help each other out, and they do give emotional support to each other. And you're right, there are one or two who can get very good at it over time if they have enough practice. But for most, it's a bit like me going out and trying to be a goal kicker in a rugby match, and I don't do it every week. You tend to struggle a little bit, and I think that's where the difficulties come. So I think we aren't really giving them access. It's access to emotional support rather than access to justice, because I think having someone who really knows the system well, to me, going into any court system, it's like climbing up a steep mountain. You need a really advanced and really well-trained mountain guide so you don't fall into crevices and don't trip over and lose your grip and all the rest of it. So having someone who knows what they're doing really makes a big difference, like most things in life. And it is worrying when people don't have that and situations go wrong, and then afterwards they feel frustrated, and it could have been, if you had a very strong and well-prepared and well-organised lawyer, that those things would have been avoided.
Sounds like you are overall kind of in favour of McKinsey friends in principle, but while having, reservations.
For emotional support, I don't mind, but I don't think they really necessarily advance access to justice, because I don't think McKinsey friends necessarily know the law. So the person might feel a little better, but it's just like having two litigants in person. But at the end of the day, if the person doesn't know the system very well, because, as a law student, basically the whole purpose of law is you understand how judges think, the law. Or you work in a certain area, if you've been experienced for a number of years, you kind of know what's going to happen next, what's happening, you kind of know the run of the play. If you're just sitting in there as a McKinsey friend for a day or two here and there, you don't pick up as much, I don't think, and you don't know the law as well. As I say, one or two may do it over a long period of time and get to know it, and by sitting in court and observing it and learn it through that process, it could be learned to some degree, but as a general rule, it's not going to be anywhere near as advanced as a person who's been doing it for years and really knows the system well, from a legal point of view.
Just kind of finally, you're kind of advocating for a separation between emotional support and legal support. McKinsey friends can do the former and the latter.
They may be able to do some of the latter, but I don't think they're going to do it as good as someone who's fully trained in law.
And so what's your opinion on, because they are dealing with it in the UK at the moment, there's a commission, what's your opinion on professional McKinsey friends?
Well, again, I don't quite know what the qualification is for a professional McKinsey friend. I think, is it someone who has actually completes a course on the law, or is it someone who does it on a regular basis? You know, if you look at it in any other, would you, if you were sick, would you go to a person who's fully trained in medicine, or someone who's a professional medical helper who's got no medical training? You know, I think at the end of the day, while the profession with no medical training may be helpful and supportive, I'd still want to be diagnosed by someone who knows what they're talking about, who's done a full medical qualification and is trained in the area for some time. So I think that's the fundamental difference. I think what's happening here is it's a way of trying to save costs, because I mean lawyers cost more than perhaps a person who doesn't have the full training and a law degree. So the idea is, well, let's put someone in there who doesn't cost as much, and so they'll cost a lot less, and then we're trying to cut back costs. Now, to some degree, obviously, you've always got to try and be cost efficient, but if you're cutting back costs but providing a much worse service, then I don't think it's good enough. You know, like I could go and say, go into a restaurant tonight and say, I'm going to be a trainee chef, I'm not trained as a chef, and I'll just watch for a while and pick it up, and my cooking's never going to be as good as a trained chef. You know, I mean, if I do it for years, I might get there, but that's the worry. And I think you start to undermine the whole profession, really. What's the point of doing a law degree for 4 years and then working in practice for many years and building up your expertise and doing lots of court cases and dealing with lots of clients, when someone can come along and say, well, I'll just sit in with them and having done 5 minutes of experience and explain to them what's happening? It just doesn't equate, in my view.
Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
That was Michelle Duggan, Chair of the New Zealand Law Society's Family Law Section, and Professor Mark Hennigan, Dean of Law at the University of Otago, speaking about the participation of Mackenzie Friends in the family court process.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.